Calls for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's Call for Action's president and your host, Shirley Rooker.
How are disaster preparedness and texting while driving related? Well, both are initiatives of AT&T. And here to discuss these projects are Andrea Brandt, she's the Director of Public Affairs for AT&T, and Kelly Morrison, who is a Public Information Officer. And we're going to talk about these things. I think we're going to start out first talking about disaster preparedness, because a lot of things that we've learned since 9/11 about our telecommunication system and the infrastructure and how vulnerable it can be. And Kelly, does a lot of this go back to 9/11, or does it predate 9/11, the type of preparedness that you're talking about?
AT&T's disaster network disaster recovery program began in 1992, and it was to provide us with a way to rapidly respond to catastrophic disasters. And what happened in New York City on 9/11 was one of our only fulfilled responses, and it was the last time this team fully deployed. So it gave us the ability to very rapidly recover from the loss of a network office we had down there right next to the trade centers. So it certainly since then, it's gathered more attention, but we've been working on it for almost 20 years.
So the goal of this is to make sure that communications continue, at least in some form, for businesses and consumers. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. So all types of communications that go through a city, cellular traffic, people's regular residential telephone lines, the commercial services that government uses, that business use, all eventually end up in a central office in a city, get aggregated and then passed on to another city or to different countries. That core office is essential. It's the nexus for communications for that community. And if we can't restore it very, very quickly, it makes it more difficult for that community itself to restore after a disaster.
Well, so what do you do? Now, let's suppose that there's a huge tornado or something hits a town and the whole communications infrastructure is just wiped out. Do you come in? Now, you have vehicles. You had a demonstration here in Washington not too long ago, and I know you've done this more than once. And this is to educate the community about what you're doing, about the initiatives you're taking. What would you do? What would happen? Just tell us step by step, what's going to go on into this town? How are you going to help them?
Sure. We begin by putting in the equipment, pre-installing it in trailers. So our equipment, the same type of equipment that would be in a brick-and-mortar office, a regular office, is pre-installed in 53-foot-long trailers, and it becomes an active part of AT&T's network. It's kept in warehouses around the United States, and we have equipment abroad. And it's kept active because the equipment inside those buildings is constantly being updated, so the equipment in our trailers is always being updated. If a disaster occurs, we take a snapshot of what that office looked like right before that happened. We gather up that information through an engineering program. We pick out the right trailers out of our inventory, and we move that as close as we can to where that office had been.
Wow, that's amazing.
Sure. We assemble it up. It begins as a construction site. We bring in all the equipment. We cable it all together. Our assumption is it may be there for 2 or 3 years, and so we try and turn it into, it's a temporary site, but it's going to be semi-permanent. We bring up the services within those trailers that used to be in that permanent office, and that way we can resume the service for that community.
So you're going to get back essential services such as hospitals, being able to reach fire and rescue squads, all of these things which could be wiped out in a time of a disaster. You will be able to help restore this. Now, would you be restoring cell phone service, internet service? What would be the things that would be in covered in this issue, in this restoration?
My team focuses on that core office in the center of a city, or one of the offices in the center of a city. Oftentimes, in a large scale disaster, the rest of the infrastructure will be okay, but that core office is what's mm-hmm. lost. There's other portions of AT&T that would be working at the same time to, you know, put telephone or the cell towers back up, or to recover breaks in fiber in different areas, say if it was a wide-scale earthquake in Los Angeles. So my team works with other teams within AT&T to bring those services back up. So we're a core infrastructure. We also have emergency communications capability. We used it as recently as Hurricane Irene, using satellite Colts. A Colt is a cell on a light truck. And we're able to put that into a community and provide a nice footprint of cellular coverage in an area that didn't have it before, or to add augment service in an area that needs more coverage.
Wow. I mean, that is so impressive. Then, of course, you're going to help businesses get back up because they're hooked into the same system as well as the consumers. So it's going to be something that is of great value to businesses. Now, when you all have these public forums, and Andrea, this is probably a question for you, mm-hmm. you invite the public. Mm-hmm. Who do you expect to come to see a demo of the trailers and the ways that you're prepared to function in an emergency?
Well, certainly we invite members of government. It's very important that they're involved and that they know what we're doing, and they are involved in all of our planning. But we also want to invite members of the community so that they are aware and that they know how important it is that companies like AT&T are ready and that they have plans in place. So we want to make sure that they understand that, but also that they are a little bit more aware of what we do and, you know, all the efforts that go into making sure that we're prepared for an emergency.
So when you come into a community and your trailers are there and set up, then the services would be restored so everybody can go back to living some semblance of a normal life, mm-hmm. including the hospitals functioning and so on. Now, you mentioned that in the recent demo that you all held here in Washington, that there were dogs involved. Do you want to fill us in on that?
Yeah, I think that was at least one of the group that I was with. They were so impressed with that. This particular group is called the Search Dog Foundation, and it is an organization that AT&T supports, and they train dogs. They pick them from shelters. I think they have to be qualified dogs, and they go through rigorous training to make sure that they can find, you know, survivors in a catastrophe. So they had a couple of exercises to show, you know, how these dogs do that, and boy, I tell you, when they found, you know, one of the volunteers, you know, she hid herself in this like tunnel-like tube. And when that dog found her, he was just barking, and there was no guessing that he found what he was looking for.
Oh, well, that gives me goosebumps.
Yeah.
I mean, that you've seen pictures of this happening. I know, and I think in 9/11 they used dogs. Lots of disasters where this happens, in the hurricanes and so on, when people are lost. So that's fantastic. It's great that AT&T supports that organization. Give us the name again of the organization.
It's a Search Dog Foundation. They are in, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but Ojai, California.
Ojai. I happen
Ojai.
To know that. I know someone who lives there.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
To the people of Ojai.
Ojai, yeah. Ojai, California. Yeah. Okay, and so now, do you all on your website have information on these projects and initiatives that are going on? So that if somebody wants to know, particularly, for example, if they wanted to donate to this foundation for the dogs, would you have that up, Kelly?
I believe there's links out to the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation on the att.com site. So
okay,
I believe
so
it's
just
on the
key
public
in search dogs
site.
And
right.
And you would find it. If you can't find it, you can probably find that easily on the internet. But now, how long have you said you started this program in 1992? Have dogs always been a part of that? Or because searching for people is a little bit different from hooking up the infrastructure, but yet they're all related.
Right. I believe AT&T began sponsoring the foundation, being one of the contributors, about 7 years ago.
Okay.
It's a fabulous program.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Let's just take a brief pause to let people know they're tuned into Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker, and my guests are Andrea Brandt. She is the Director of Public Affairs for AT&T, and Kelly Morrison, who's a Public Information Officer and who's been very involved in the initiative on setting up the emergency response. Tell us, Kelly, how, you know, what's so interesting to me is I'm hearing you sit, you're telling me that AT&T is investing in this equipment, keeping equipment in your trailers updated to match the equipment in your offices, so that when those offices, if there's a destruction, they can move in and take it over. This has got to be extraordinarily expensive.
It's a big investment, and it's an ongoing investment because our network continues to evolve. When it began in 1992, most communications was being passed back and forth over copper wires, copper cables. And now virtually everything at the high speed is going across at fiber optic. So the equipment has changed. Our processes have changed, and we need to keep testing that. If we don't test it in real-world mm-hmm. situations, we don't know that we're going to be effective if something does happen.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add another one of the segments or the exhibits that we saw yesterday that really impressed, again, the group that I was with were the hazmat outfits and the we did not have any idea that I didn't for AT&T that we have people that are actually trained in dealing with hazardous materials.
Okay. So, and that's AT&T employees.
Correct. There's 30 people on our team. I'm one of them that's a hazmat technician. We've gone through the regular training that somebody in any industry would, and then we tailor it just for telecommunications. Because there are some special skills that we need to have. So when you go into an office that may have been contaminated, we can do an assessment. And then our goal is to continue to keep the equipment running until a commercial contractor could come in to do the remediation. So we've used that. We used it in Graniteville, South Carolina. They had a chlorine tanker spill. Unfortunately, it killed people in the town, but it also contaminated our office. And we were able to send a team in and keep that equipment running. So, again, the town had communications while they worked on the emergency.
I don't think most people have a clue that this kind of thing goes on behind the scenes just to keep you prepared in case of an emergency.
That communications network is critical for any city. We want to make sure it stays up.
And I think a lot of lessons were learned during 9/11, too. Did you all build on the things that happened there in terms of making changes to your network, to your preparedness?
Absolutely. And we were able to do a very rapid response. We were able to set up a recovery compound across the Hudson River in Jersey City, New Jersey, and connect to that same fiber ring that had served the office that was lost. And we were able to get the initial service up in 53 hours, which we're very, very
wow.
proud of. But one of the things we learned is that the entire transportation network went down. So our team members from around the country that normally would fly in had to come in by car or by train. So it changed our response. Fortunately, we had plenty of people up and down the Northeast and Southeast coast that we could respond quickly.
Wow. It really does just kind of baffle me that, or boggles the mind, I guess is a more appropriate expression for the effort that goes into this. And I gather you spend your time, this is what you do.
Exactly.
You keep everything ready in case it's needed.
There are 30 of us dedicated within the company to just do disaster recovery. And then we have volunteers that are members of other AT&T groups across our network that do that traditional work every day. And then they volunteer to come out with us during emergency responses and during exercises like we did here in the past.
Andrea, what kind of response do you get from the people who come to these demonstrations? Are they just blown away by the initiative that's being taken?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you said it correctly. It boggles the mind. I myself, being an AT&T employee, didn't even know all of the things that we do. It is very impressive. And, you know, I couldn't be prouder, you know, when I see that going on, because I think we're probably in the forefront of disaster preparedness, if you will, amongst companies. I mean, we have to be, because people rely on technology these days so much.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, integral part of our lives. We have to be.
Well, we can't fly planes. We can't operate hospitals. We can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So,
exactly.
Yeah, it is astonishing. Well, where do you go on this? I mean, looking into the future, do you think that you will be able to develop more of these trailers and have them in different places? I mean, right now, and this is not a criticism, don't misunderstand me, but if you had to go all the way to the West Coast, you got to drive these trailers, right?
We have equipment warehouses all around the United States.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Do. So our goal is to be on site, staged with that equipment within 24 hours of activation. So that includes, you know, up and down the coast in Los Angeles or in California.
Mm-hmm.
So we've looked at that. We've prioritized what kind of equipment we put in different sections of the country. And we continue to grow our capability. Sometimes we'll take an older trailer, take out all the equipment and repurpose it to match the kind of equipment that's in the newer buildings in the network.
Well, not just the updating of it, but just the maintenance of it, to making sure. So you do tests on this regularly, I assume, to see that everything is in operational order. This would be part of what you're doing.
Exactly. So when it's back in the warehouses, when we take it back from an exercise in the field, we connect it again to the network. So really our network maintenance centers see it as a regular traditional office. In fact, we'll call them and say we're about to take it out of the warehouse. Otherwise, it looks like an office has failed. So we'll take that equipment down and turn it back up again when we bring it out into a parking lot or to an open field.
How long have you been involved in the project?
I started in 1998. So
you're pretty close to the beginning.
Indeed. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And how have you seen it change?
My favorite part is just watching the speed of the technology, the capacity of the technology change. Again, as we've gone to fiber optic and now people are carrying phones that have video. The expectation is much, much higher. But the technology has changed to allow that to happen. It's just fascinating.
Well, now, are you able to restore full service through these trailers, or is it going to be limited service for a period of time in an area?
Our first commitment is to do the through service so it heals our network. And then there's a priority that goes through DHS's NCC process. It's a Department of Homeland Security. It's okay. The National Coordinating Center. So different groups have a different level of priority. So obviously law enforcement, health, the hospitals, local government, federal government. And so we'll restore based on sort of the marching orders that we get from the federal government. But our goal is to bring that service level back up to that community. We may use newer technologies than what had been in that office because the capabilities of the network have changed.
Yeah. And of course, with the speed of which technology is developing, it kind of boggles your mind just trying to keep up with it. So that's very, very impressive. Well, now, is there anything else you'd like to add about this initiative, which I think is very impressive, because I want to go on and talk about this whole texting project that AT&T is involved in. Are we?
Sure. Just real quickly, one of the things that we depend on our own team is emergency communication. So we have equipment that lets us establish that when no other communications are available. It's satellite-based, and we use it for our own command team. But when we don't need it, we make it available. FEMA will request it. And we're able to send it out into communities that have been impacted by a disaster. So the satellite COLTs will be able to provide cellular coverage. A good example is after Hurricane Irene, Margaretville, New York was devastated by a flash flood. And FEMA set up an intake center and a command center up there, and they asked AT&T to provide communications capability. It's an area that doesn't normally have cell service. It's remote, and we were able to set that up and provide them coverage while they did the response.
That is really incredible. I mean, really, really incredible. Let's just pause here to let people know they're listening to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guests are Andrea Brandt, Director of Public Affairs for AT&T, and Kelly Morrison, Public Information Officer. And and that is very impressive, Kelly. Thank you for telling us that. Do they have cell service there now?
You know, it goes back to the way it was before.
Andrea, I know you've recently been involved in it, which to me is an absolutely brilliant project, and that is setting up simulators and letting kids think they're driving a car while they're texting.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Oh, love to. And it's a great segue in a way. It's kind of going from disaster preparedness and recovery to disaster prevention.
Yes.
How we like to look at it. What you're referring to is a simulator that the teens used. It's an actual car that has, it does not move, but there are some sensors under the wheels, and they wear this apparatus, you know, around their eyes, and they text while they drive. They virtually drive, and they get to see really how slow their responses are, how they're really not very good drivers, in a very safe way. And this was part of a summit that we recently had that you mentioned that was held by National Organizations for Youth Safety.
Well, I just thought it was amazing. And one of the things, and I'd heard this about cell phones, just talking on a cell phone, that it was equivalent to gulping three beers and getting behind the wheel. And texting, it's the equivalent of having double the amount of alcohol that you're permitted for safe driving.
Well, certainly your response time is much slower when you are texting. The average amount of time that you are looking away from the road when you're texting is 5 seconds, and that's if you're going 55 miles an hour. So that's pretty much like a football field. So you can imagine how dangerous that is. And because teens really communicate now, you know, studies have shown they don't talk on the cell phone as much. They really text.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we really chose to, you know, focus our prevention efforts.
Well, I was just astonished by this. And I know you did this in Virginia. Is that correct? Is that where you had
Crystal City.
Have you all done this before? Is this something you're going to be doing again?
Well, noise usually holds the summits. I think what's unique to this, AT&T was a major sponsor, as was Allstate. But this particular summit, we had teens that came in that won a contest. They got to apply to hold their own summit to get some funding from NOISE to hold their own summit back in their own community.
What is NOISE?
National Organizations for Youth Safety.
Okay.
I'm sorry, that's their acronym.
Okay. Okay, so they put together this project.
Mm-hmm.
to educate kids. Do you think the kids are going to actually go back to schools and talk about it?
Oh, I have.
I'm hoping it scared the daylights out of them.
Absolutely. I have no doubt. You should have seen these kids were so excited. They know the dangers. They know that they are a very effective communicator to their peers. And so they came up with all kinds of things that they were going to do when they went back to their summits back home.
Well, I think one of the things that came out of some of the stuff that I read about it was the fact that the kids were so astonished at how bad they were driving when they were texting.
Mm-hmm. Especially at that age, you think you're impervious.
And of course.
That you can handle anything. And then adults, too. I mean, I've seen adults do the simulator, and they can't believe that they drive that poorly.
Is this something that's going to be moving around the country? Is it going to be in other communities and exposing more and more kids to it?
Oh, yes. Well, NOISE, National Organizations for Youth Safety, works a lot on that. They work very regularly with kids throughout the country. Family, community, and career leaders of America also, you know, work on that as well. And they work very closely with NOISE. And a lot of those teens were there as well as the winners of those, the applications. So you will be seeing summits popping up in about 10 to 11 different states. I think there were 13 winners from about 10 or 11 different states. And it was just amazing to see how inspired they were. And, you know, I think the program was great. We had Charlene Lake, who is our chief sustainability officer, fly in from Dallas just to be there with the kids. And I think they really appreciated that.
Do you anticipate that this is something that will be an ongoing project of AT&T?
Oh, we are certainly. Worthwhile. We're very committed. We announced just this year a $1 million multi-year commitment to.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, it's wonderful. And I'm excited because I'm so involved in it. And it's a great way to be in the community, to really touch the community and make an impact. And with these teens, I mean, it couldn't be more exciting.
Yeah. And more revealing. I would think.
Yes.
Do you have any statistics? Are there certain areas where kids are more likely to be in accidents? I mean, texting aside, or is it just all over any kid anywhere?
It hits everyone, and it's just amazing. You know, there are all kinds of distractions in the cars, which I learned when I was at the summit that you have to be concerned about. The statistics get higher. I think you are over 100% more likely to be in an accident if you've got three teen passengers in your car.
Oh, yes, I've read that.
Teen driving, yeah. So there are all kinds of distractions, and especially when you're a teen, you have just you don't have the skill set. You haven't been driving that long. So all the more reason you really need to be focused on the road.
Well, I read somewhere also it's the way the brain is developed.
Yes.
You know, there's all kinds of development processes
that
are not developed.
Right?
Exactly.
Until you're in your 20s,
I think. The answer is to take away the cell phone, take away all the kids, make them drive by themselves on a road in the daylight.
Yeah. Well, we're trying to not be so restrictive.
Right, exactly.
Just use a little common sense when you're driving. But that's, you know, you bring up a great point in that, you know, just take the distractions away as much as possible. Like our new app, it's a free app called Drive Mode, free to AT&T, you know, customers that you can download that basically puts your phone in like airplane mode so that it doesn't ring. And what it does, it kind of takes that distraction away. You don't feel like you have to pick up the phone and see who it is.
Oh, it takes away the temptation.
Exactly. So that's why something like that is such a nice product. But there are several out there, and we've got them on our app store. You know, if you want to check them out.
And those are free. I mean,
well, ours is free. There are some that you charge, but yes, there are others that are free, but ours is certainly free.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you both for taking time to talk about some of these initiatives, which I think are fascinating. Kelly, particularly, I mean, I wish you both tremendous success, but boy, can I see how what you all do impact on the lives of people in terrible situations. And so it's very, very enlightening to have you both. My guests have been Andrea Brandt, Director of Public Affairs for AT&T, and Kelly Morrison, Public Information Officer. And you have been listening to us right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Shirley Rooker. We thank you for joining us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.